Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. It's a gorgeous, sunny Sunday afternoon or late morning here in Toronto. How you doing, Bob?
Surprisingly okay, I think. I thought it would hurt more than it does, although I'm sure for people it hurts exactly as much as they thought it would. But for me personally, I'm okay. This one bothers me less than Montreal.
Oh, yeah. Same thing the year before that with Columbus. This one's different.
You know, the Columbus one didn't torture me because it was coming out of COVID and it was in the bubble and it was just so weird. And even though the Leafs should have won, it just felt like there was so much weirdness around it. Who the hell knows? And then, of course, the two Boston ones were crippling. Losing to Washington was actually kind of fun in a perverse way. So I would put this one in the middle of gut punches.
Yeah. It's the first thing is that Tampa only once has gone to a game seven, and that was against the Islanders. And that was a series that New York, all three of their wins were by one goal. The Lightning outscored New York by nine in that series in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Tampa has never been really pushed like this before in the playoffs. And Toronto did what every other NHL team has done. They lost to Tampa.
Steven Stamkos afterwards talked about how this was about as hard a series as they've had to play during their run and how basically Toronto's a great team. And then he said, and look, we're a great team. That's kind of what it was two great teams met. It went seven games and was decided by one goal.
Yeah.
It literally, the only way it could have been closer is if it did go to overtime because a sudden death is involved. But in terms of the numbers, this is as far as you can push a series. The fact that they didn't fold after they went down 1-0, and I don't think they folded after they went down 2-1 because they fought like hell. On a kind of a symbolic victory level, lots to take away. Not that that's satisfying because it's the playoffs and nobody's name is symbolically put on the cup. But yeah, it was middle of the road gut punch.
So let me ask you this.
Okay.
All 16 teams get to decide who they least want to face in the playoffs. I'm going to say the number one team is probably Colorado, followed closely by Tampa, and there is no third choice.
I'm going to disagree. Oh, you mean of the teams left?
Yeah. No, of all 16 teams, the number one team that would scare you is like Colorado. The number two team would have been Tampa, and no other team would have really scared you.
Yeah, maybe Toronto had too many questions going in to be scared of. I made the comment that after the first game and there was the big victory that maybe Toronto was lucky that they drew Tampa Bay instead of Boston because of styles of play. Yeah, I was dumb. But also, I probably underestimated what Tampa was going to bring to this run. I kind of thought after two successful runs and some roster turnover, maybe it was just their time to just not have it. Like, it was like the Leafs were peaking. Tampa had already been there. Were they on the way down? And I misjudged how great Tampa still is.
I got to tell you, I won money. I didn't bet on game seven. Mm-hmm. But the point is that I had a rule all year. And I'm still new in the whole betting game, you know, and all that kind of jazz. But my one rule was if Vasilevsky was playing, then I'm not betting against Tampa. And that's kind of in the end what it comes down to, is that as long as they got Vasilevsky and they got Kucherov and they got Victor Hedman, I'm not betting against them. And, you know, and once again, like put it this way, Bob, the game-winning goal in game six by Braden Point, that was his only shot on the night. Tampa just always does this.
Yeah, they find ways. People talked about how Campbell was outplaying Vasilevsky, and I think that was true for five games. Mm-hmm. But in the last two, that was not true. And it's not that Campbell dropped off. It's just that Vasilevsky rose his level you just knew, like, I texted my buddy last night, my buddy Adam Higgs, and I said, they're not going to score more than two on Vasilevskiy tonight. And they did score two, just one of them was taken away. It felt like the kind of game they were going to have to win 2-1 or 1-0.
Yeah.
You just weren't going to put that many by him. And in the end, it was 2-1, but just the wrong way. I underestimated how good Tampa was. And if you remember correctly, Matt, I predicted it would be the Leafs in six.
Yeah.
But my secondary choice was Tampa in seven. It was like, if the Leafs didn't win it in six, they weren't going to win it in seven. Then it was going to be Tampa. And that's pretty much what happened, is they were so close in game six and so close in game seven. And I don't want to talk about championship pedigree. I think just Tampa's just a little bit better. Just a little bit better.
Yeah, they are. They are a little bit better. And I don't think they cared that much about the regular season.
No.
You know, if they wanted to go full balls to the wall, they would have won the President's Trophy. You know, they could have had the number one record.
I want to put a pin in that idea, because when we talk a little bit more about how the Leafs should approach next year, I want to come back to this idea of what the regular season should or shouldn't mean. So can we come back to that one for a second?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I want to throw this out to you before I get to, because you're a football guy, and so you would have loved this. But do you remember in the late 80s and early 90s how the NFC was so much ahead of the AFC?
Yes.
And it felt like the championship game in the NFC was really the Super Bowl, because whoever got served up next was basically going to be like Johnny Canine walking into the ring.
Absolutely. Dallas, San Fran. It's like, okay, this is the real Super Bowl. Then next week, you know, you'll beat Buffalo or the Chargers with Stan Humphries.
So here's what's intellectually unsatisfying about what just happened. What we probably saw was the hockey equivalent to those NFC championship games. The problem is that was three rounds in football. It felt like the apex. This was the first round. And you had the two best teams in the conference meet in the first round and play this epic game that we're going to remember as fans for decades. But it happened in the first round, which is not how the playoffs are supposed to work. You're supposed to work your way up to that, to where you meet the best teams. But just the way it was set up is, if we stop and think, okay, if this exact same series had been played, but it was round three, we would think the Leafs were on the cusp of greatness.
Yeah.
But because it happened first, we have to say, like, it feels like the equivalent to losing to Montreal, but it's not. Just on
not
paper.
Even close.
No, just on paper.
Yeah, it's location, 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 Bob. It's the location of that first round. It's against Tampa. Look at Edmonton. Hey, they got further than Toronto. They beat old ass Jonathan Quick and the Kings, and that took seven games. If the Leafs were facing, I'd even say Boston or the Rangers or Pittsburgh or Washington, I have no doubt Toronto would win. It wouldn't go seven. If they played Carolina, I'm like, yep. Or Florida, I'm like, okay, those could go either way. But I still think Toronto would be, like, I would feel better about it. Like, Toronto taking on Tampa was the number, like, only Nashville had a harder first round opponent than the Leafs.
I'm going to say something, and this is like a Stephen A. Smith type hot take, maybe more Skip Bayless. Are you ready?
Do it.
I think the first round proved that Marner Matthews is better than McDavid Draisaitl.
Ooh.
And here's why. McDavid had an incredible first round. God, he was brilliant. Like, he really is just absolutely unbelievable to watch. Draisaitl wasn't, you know, there were different factors involved with health and stuff, but you know, 10 assists, never been done in a first round before. Like, McDavid was amazing. But to your point, it was over seven games to shitty LA. Marner and Matthews looked incredibly dangerous. They looked like the two best players on the ice night after night after night against the best team of this generation. How would McDavid and Draisaitl looked if they had been up against Tampa in that first round? You think McDavid would be walking away with 10 assists then?
No. God, no. Absolutely not. And here's to add to that, Bob, the Kings had the lowest goal differential of any of the playoff teams. In fact, Vegas and Vancouver, who didn't make the playoffs, those teams finished with a better goal differential. You want to talk about a soft landing spot? The second place Edmonton Oilers getting to face the LA Kings while the second place Toronto Maple Leafs in the Atlantic took on Tampa. Get the fuck out of here.
Okay, now this may sound like deranged Toronto schadenfreude or whatever. It's not really schadenfreude, but it just may sound like we're delusional. But this is part of the greatness of this series and part of the problem of this series for Toronto. And maybe this is where we can start to talk about how and why they lost. Part of the answer, as I think we've recently covered, is Tampa's fucking great. Another thing is our stars showed up. Like, the Dubas plan worked. Like, those four players, you know, Tavares we can get into more, but let's say certainly Marner and Matthews were incredible. They looked like two of the best players in the world. Like, they, and Marner especially, like, God, like, what a unbelievable series for that guy. You know, but Tampa was deeper. You know, the stars showed up for both sides. I think our stars outplayed theirs and their team outplayed ours.
Yeah, perfectly put it. Our stars were slightly better than their stars. Their team was better than ours. And their team still has, you know, Thanos in Andre Vasilevsky.
Right. And that ultimately is like how you construct a hockey team. I think it was such a Tampa Bay seasoned, experienced team way to win last night, where the Stars basically played to a stalemate with the Leafs a little bit better, but their third line killed us and their goals came from their third line. You know, like, that's classic game seven is, you know, your Stars basically neutralize each other. What else you got?
Yeah, there's Nicholas Paul scoring an incredible second goal. And by the way, moments before it, Vasilevsky stopped Matthews. So, you know, that was is such a turnaround. But the other thing, and by the way, it'll be said to everyone going, oh, you guys are being too soft. No, like, ultimately, the Leafs failed. They had a job to do, and they failed. They didn't do it. Now, they failed in a job that every other NHL team has failed at over the last 2 years. So that needs to be remembered. But one thing that this all comes back to, Bob, is COVID. Mm-hmm. This all comes back to COVID.
How
where
so?
The when the Leafs gave all that money to Matthews and Marner, they were like, okay, we know for a year this is going to sting with our salary cap, but the cap will keep going up. Seattle's coming in. Whenever a new franchise comes in, that gets a bump to the salary cap. We saw it with Vegas. Then COVID happened. It's like, remember all those plans you had about why giving all that money makes sense? Well, now it becomes much more difficult for you.
Yeah, and also the no tax factor in Florida doesn't hurt, where guys who get paid that money basically keep that money.
Yeah.
It like, I don't know that there's any way to solve that. I've heard people talk about a prorated salary cap, which is based against the kind of measured against the local taxes that you pay, income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like if you thought the cap was not fun to talk about, let's talk about prorated salaries.
Jesus.
Right. I just don't see that happening. I think when we watched last night, it's almost impossible to break down the game because honestly, how could you point at one thing and say, well, that's where they blew it? Like, maybe small mistakes here and there, but over the course of 60 minutes, it played very well and Tampa played exceptionally well.
I will say this. If you are good, the criticism you can do is that they could, I know they got the most shots they've had in any game tonight, last night with 31. But there wasn't a lot of high danger. Like, Vasilevsky was really good, but beyond a couple little stretches, I didn't feel that, like, and this is me nitpicking, is that they could have made Vasilevsky sweat a little bit more. That's it. That's my criticism.
Did you notice how many times the Leafs winger would be flying down the wing and they'd be looking to cut in or they'd be looking to pass into that sort of golden lane?
Yeah.
And they couldn't, and they'd wind up going around the net, and it looks exciting. It looks like something really dynamic's happening, but what's really happening is like a plane that doesn't know how to land, like you're just circling.
Yeah.
And that ultimately, I kept looking at that and thinking, fuck, they're really doing a good job of taking away the middle. And, you know, there's, we probably, because there's so many stars up front for Tampa Bay, we probably don't talk about just how good their defense is, 1 through 6. Obviously, there's Hedman. He was probably Tampa's best player all told, or most impactful player over 7 games. But they just made it so damn hard for the Leafs to get to the middle of the ice. So to your point about danger, which I think is a really good one, there was a lot of times where it was guys shooting from the point or from some spot that wasn't ideal and just hoping shit would happen. And yeah. Vasilevskiy, you know, it's funny. There was this one moment. I can't remember who was in front of him, but it was on the power play. I think it was Tavares. And Vasilevskiy was just looking over him. It looked like older brother, little brother.
Yeah.
They just could not disturb him nearly enough. We got to talk about the reffing, don't we?
Well, the reffing was bad. It wasn't atrocious, but the problem was in games 6 and 7, when there was a close call, it would usually go against the Leafs. Like, to me, the worst moment for the officials wasn't even the calling the high stick on the Cal foot one, where the stick never even came close to hitting him in the head. That was just Foot selling it. That was a great sell job by him. It was in game 6 in overtime when Alex Killorn was treating Austin Matthews like Austin Matthews was a speedboat, and Killorn wanted to go water skiing, just grabbing onto the back of his jersey. Like, he might as well have been going, wee, and no call. That, to me, is what will always bother me the most.
You know, Friedge brought up a good point, and this is where I would have a problem with the refs, is any given call can be missed. That's the way it goes. But you have to set a standard so the players know how to play. These guys are professionals. They've literally played thousands upon thousands of games in the course of their lives. They understand how to adjust. It's like a pitcher. It's a pitcher's batter strike zone thing. If you keep giving the low outside corner over the course of 9 innings, they'll figure out, okay, this guy's given the low outside corner. The fact that Justin Hall gets called for a pick on that on the Tavares goal.
Yeah.
Okay, borderline call, but you can make that call. But you can't make that call if you haven't been making that call. It's not like some egregious thing that happened. Yeah, sure, technically. Like, a lineman gets his hands up in somebody's face. You know what I mean? Could you call it? Well, I guess you could call holding if it was, but like, what's your standard you're setting so the players know how to play? Out of nowhere, on a goal, in an incredibly tight game, in a deciding game 7, they decided all of a sudden something they hadn't been calling against Tampa all series long, then they're going to call it. That was bullshit.
Yep. No, and that's the perfect way to word it. It's just about, you're never calling it, now you are. What are you doing? Yeah, no, you're right. It was a bad one. I guess for me, the Matthews one always sticks out because here's the best player in the league, or the second best player, wherever you want to put him. And he's clearly getting mugged. It's easy to see, but it's overtime, so you're not going to call it. That also is bullshit.
I agree with that, but here's the thing. The number one way you know the refs were good at their jobs is they're not the story after the game.
Yeah.
And the players adjust. They call a fair game on either side. But I would rather deal with a missed call. Like, I think they missed a call when we were up 5-on-4, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was Paul, but somebody tripped Nylander right down low by the net. And yes, the ref's clearly looking at it. Clearly. Like, I've seen funny Zapruder things on the internet where people are showing the sight line as he's looking at the trip and clearly just decides not to call it. It's not enough of a trip that he's going to let Toronto go up 5-3. Okay, I think that's bullshit because that's a call. You got to call it. But maybe they overlooked some Toronto stuff too, right? That's a judgment call in the moment. This is like, you know this from managing people, Matt. What drives people crazy is not one decision versus another. Is that thing consistent with what you've said before?
Yes.
If you tell me 50 times I need to use the right door, and then on the 51st time, the right door is the wrong one, I'm like, what the fuck? So I thought, like, the refs didn't cost them the game. There was enough time that they could have scored again. But God, when I saw that, I just thought, this is going to be such an incredible hill to climb. And you take away a goal?
I know.
I was not like, I hope people hold that team to account, like that reffing crew, because I thought that was bullshit. And it's not why the Leafs lost, but fuck, it sure helped Tampa win.
When a series is that close, it's the little things in the margins that decide it. That's what makes, if the Leafs had lost 5-0 last night and the game was called pretty much the same way and they waved that goal off and the Leafs lost 5-0, no one would care. But it's because it was that close that it sticks out that much more.
All right. Well, we should probably get like not so much into the game now, but more like what happens now, because
it's so boring.
Yeah, I don't know what happens next. Do you have any sense of what to expect?
Yes, I've complete. Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Here's what's going to happen. The Leafs are going to have to give away an asset or a draft pick so that some team will take Peter Mrazek and his $3.8 million contract. So bye-bye, Peter. That's step one. Okay. Step two, Ilya Mikheyev is going to get overpaid by a team. So bye-bye, Ilya Mikheyev. Then it's about the Leafs finding a good contract for Jack Campbell. That's going to be the big story.
Who's doing this decision-making?
Dubas is doing this decision-making.
Now, is that your prediction or what you think should happen, or both?
Both. Yeah.
I think it should be Dubas. I'm not sure it will be.
You know, to me, the only sexy story is the Barry Trotz one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but okay, if the Leafs had lost to Washington or the Rangers or the LA Kings, like one of these other teams, then it's like, okay, Dubas, sit down. We got to have a conversation. But because it was Tampa, I don't think you do. I think Dubas comes back. I think it's actually going to be a very boring offseason. Everyone comes back and it's all about getting rid of Mrazek and signing Campbell.
Okay. Now, we've been very gentle on the Leafs for having lost a first round series to this point. And I think we've done the right thing. I think our analysis has been fair based on the series that they played. However, let's go to the C-suite. Let's go to the corporate suites. And now you're Brendan Shanahan and you're standing there and there's this giant desk in front of you and a bunch of grim looking people around it, all wearing $4,000 suits. And he's got to explain exactly what his plan is going forward. Are we convinced that ownership, given the fact that now this is 5 years in a row that they have lost an elimination game in the first round.
Yeah.
Given the fact that their inability to get out of the first round is now entering historic proportions across all sports.
Correct.
We can all say, well, that doesn't matter based on what this team did. However, the management team build this as the apex of where they were going. And with the apex of where they were going was not a victory. Is that justifiable in a corporate suite where this team, every time they don't win a playoff round, is throwing tons of potential money in a barrel and setting it on fire?
When you put it like that, when you do the big picture of every year they're eliminated in the first round, you're right. You can't discount the possibility of something big. Even though I think it's going to be boring, yes, you're right. You have to allow for that to be a possibility. The question is what do you do? You know, like the weird thing here, Bob, is there's so much of me that wants to just yell and scream and mother bleep this team. I don't know. Maybe I will in a day from now, but right now I just don't have that in me. I think I'm the most disappointed. Because this is in some ways, this is so boring. Oh, they lost again in the first round. Boring. I just wanted to see something new in my life.
Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Do it.
And literally, I'm going to be the devil's lawyer in this. The devil meaning the management and brain trust of the Leafs. This past year, I watched something I thought I would never see, and that was almost the city uniformly not give a shit about the Leafs during the regular season.
Correct.
And the fact that everyone said, well, this will really matter when they get to the playoffs. And if they win, we're moving on. Well, they didn't. So what am I expecting going into next year? Like, you can tell me, I promise you we'll be better next year. But what evidence is there of that? I mean, Tampa's coming back next year, aren't they?
They are.
And you're running back exactly the same team against the team that just beat you, and you're telling me it's going to have a different outcome.
I see where you're going.
I'm not playing devil's advocate here.
No, you're playing. Okay.
Shanahan's going to have to answer.
Yeah. No, and by the way, you're absolutely right. It's Victor Hedman's going to be 32. McDonough's going to be 33. You know, you go up and down, and it's an older defense for Tampa. Like, you can do things like that. Like,
Okay, can I jump in here? I'm going to play devil's advocate. Okay, ready? Mr. Cause, but the Leafs defense, you've got Mark Giordano, who's 38 years old, and TJ Brody's 32, and Jake Muzzin was too old for the regular season. He looked pretty good in the playoffs, but he's 33. Can you expect him to do that again? Are you telling me this roster?
It's a great counter. It's absolutely a great counter. And the big picture problem, again, with all of this is that the Leafs signed all their big, shiny toys. And by the way, Matthews could win the Hart. Marner would have got 100 points if he'd wanted to. You know, Nylander took a step up. They signed all those guys at the exact wrong time because then a global pandemic came and it just screwed their chances of proper flexibility.
So you're telling me, Mr. Cause, that this team that you've assembled, Mr. Shanahan, or you went from Cause to Shanahan there, that they're hamstrung by the economics of the game and that we can't expect them to do any better next year?
That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you that.
That's unsatisfying. We're Toronto. We demand better. We've got world-class facilities and, you know, we've spared no expense, psychological coaching, skills coaching. You know, this is literally the premium franchise in the entire sport. And you're telling me the cap structure means we can't get out of the first round?
We need to murder Andre Vasilevsky. Guys, give me $2 million and let's cut off the recording. Or we don't need to murder him. We just need to kidnap him. Put him on a beautiful island.
I have a theory. Mm. What could save Dubas's job is Barry Trotz, because somebody's going to want change.
Yeah.
And if they go back with Dubas and Keefe next year, look, there's 115 points. This is like they set a record for wins, for points. They were great this year, but it doesn't matter because they failed in the playoffs. And they failed in the playoffs five times in a row. And maybe what's even worse about this is all the things that you said were going to happen on your plan did. And you still failed in the first round. So when you're creating a case for how your plan is going to work, like literally now it's just that you have to believe. Well, they had the you have to believe last year. So I personally think they should run it back. Yeah. I think the defense is an issue in terms of its age. I'm not sure it's going to be as quiet as you think it's going to be, but I would keep the same team of Dubas and Keefe and Keefe's people together. I would not do a bloodletting, but promises get made along the way. And, you know, at a certain point, like this is Toronto, like they're not slowly building in Anaheim, like, every time they don't do this, a ton of money gets lost.
Ah, those tickets were so expensive. They made up for it. They got that fourth home game.
It's not the money that they didn't earn. pardon me. It's not the money that they earned. It's the money they didn't earn.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, you're right.
You know, and think about sports media. Like, how do you guys F now?
Well,
yeah. You know, like, oh, what about all the corporate partners out there? What about the people who are like, wait a minute, so my Scotiabank ads aren't going to be shown as much? Like, you promised me when I spent X dollars, like, this team was going to deliver X number of viewers, you know?
The crazy thing here about this series wasn't a dimmer switch. It was a light switch. Because let's say the Leafs won last night. I'm going to guarantee you, as great as Florida is and Carolina, the Leafs would be the favorites to come out of the East.
Oh, for sure.
They get knocked out in the first round. That's how crazy the stakes were in this series.
I actually thought the conference final would be Carolina and Toronto. And Carolina would win. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But again, I underestimated Tampa Bay's ability to run it back. I don't feel like I underestimated the Leafs. I picked them to win. But I maybe overestimated Carolina. We'll see. It's hard not to go with Tampa Bay at this point. So maybe we wind up losing to the eventual champs or the eventual, you know, cup finalist.
They were the second or the first scariest playoff team.
Okay, let me ask you this. If you're Brendan Shanahan, are you standing in front of your bosses and defending Kyle Dubas when it's time for you as the president to justify what just happened?
Yep, I think you are.
Okay.
I think you are. And I know it's a broken record, but it's just you're facing Tampa.
Do you think he is? Like, I know the way you answered it is he should be.
Yeah.
But do you think he will?
I think so. I because I mean, I guess the only pushback I would have to my own thought is that these guys are this ultra competitive human beings, far more than I am. So in their minds, maybe they just view this as, nope, this is just failure. We need to make some major changes.
Yeah, I just don't know. Honestly, I felt last year that changes were needed. They were not made. I would have been wrong about Marner. They obviously understood their asset better than many of us did in terms of how much better he could get. I loved him. He was fantastic. And it wasn't just how he played. It was like how he conducted himself. He was up for it. When he came out and threw that hit on Hedman in the first minute or so, it just felt like a different team. He felt like a different player. Matthews was always going to be great. Marner felt like, is he going to be a mystery? Well, he's not a mystery anymore. He's a top 10 player in the league. So they made smart decisions. They made a lot of smart decisions. Here's what worries me when they have to justify this, Matt, is they did all this stuff right and they still didn't get results. So how do you keep trotting the same plan out? And I'll throw this to you. They can't get rid of Tavares. He's got a no trade. He's not going anywhere. You wouldn't get rid of Marner and Matthews at this point. That would be insane. So is success trading Nylander, who had 80 points, looked really good in this playoff series, and makes under $7 million a year?
You bring it all back.
Yeah. You're either running it back or you're saying we need new coaching and new management because the team is there, but something is missing.
If they had lost to Tampa where they got outclassed, fine, blow it up, fire a coach, trade a forward. But like the three Canadian teams, Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto had more points than Calgary and Edmonton, and Toronto had a gargantuanly more difficult task than either Calgary with the Dallas Stars or Edmonton with the LA Kings.
I'm going to make a basketball analogy because I know you love going to other sports.
Hell yeah.
You know who the Leafs reminded me of last night?
Can I guess?
Sure.
I'm going to guess the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns.
No, that was really good. Close. It was actually the Indiana Pacers under Reggie Miller. Where Austin Matthews is like an all-time great player, as Reggie Miller was. And that Indiana team was so damn good. There was just one team they weren't better than.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Couldn't beat Jordan.
I watched last night and I thought, you know, like maybe this is just a really effing excellent team that is destined to be the second best team to a team that belongs to history.
Yeah.
For the next little while.
Yeah, you're right. It's a good analogy. I think my Phoenix Suns was a better analogy than your Pacers. But then when you bring in the fact it was going up against Jordan, yeah, yours is the right one. That is correct. And by the way, Bob, I want to give spicier takes here. Do you know how much easier my show would be if it's fire, trade, fuck them, fuck this, Dubas, get out of here, you analytical nerd. Expected goals are for losers. But if I'm just dealing with reality on reality's terms, And I always subscribe to the idea of degree of difficulty. Only Nashville had a higher level of degree of difficulty, and they got swept.
I tried to play this game with my head this morning where it was like, if they played this series 100 times, who would win more? And I think Tampa Bay wins more, largely because stouter defense, better goalie. But it was about 54-46 was what my gut settled on.
Fair.
You know, and that's why you probably feel like it's hard to get really upset about this because one, the result that was earned was the one that actually happened. And two, nothing stupid happened along the way. It was just two really great teams met and the slightly better one won.
Beyond Nylander in game five, where he did a bit of a disengagement game, and then he gets those two goals late, which meant nothing. Beyond that moment with Nylander, there was nothing stupid that happened. You're right.
Unfortunately, the drip, drip, drip of John Tavares' game was overshadowed by the fact that he had a couple of great individual performances, like really big things happened. But over the course of the series, the expected goals tilted heavily towards Tampa when his lines were on the ice. Mm-hmm. And at $11 million, that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, the other team doesn't have to look at John Tavares on the ice and say, how the hell do we deal with this? The way you would everybody else who's in that pay stratosphere.
It's true.
And that's,
by the way, real quick, this podcast brought to you by our lawyer, our friend, Jeff Pollock. If you need legal help, legal representation, stuff with taxes, it's a small boutique law firm, but not a snobby boutique law firm. One that he'll call you and he will always be there for you. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, JeffPollock.com.
You want to hear something funny as we wrap up, Matt? I'm actually more excited for the regular season next year than I was going into this year because they lost. I feel like they got jobbed by fate.
They did.
And they actually proved themselves to have enormous character on the ice, tremendous resolve, outstanding play. I feel like even in losing, they became a more likable team by trying.
Yeah. Like, I am just massively bummed out, but I'm not angry. I'm angry at fate and luck and playoff seeding, but I'm not angry at the team or the coaches or the GM or Shanahan.
It felt like I watched a great fight, and in the 12th round, it was a split decision and both guys hug in the middle of the ring and you go, you know what? That was what it was.
Yeah.
But you even by getting the L, if you trust the process, if you get the L the right way, especially in hockey where so much character is sewn into performance, they became a much more likable team by not backing down.
And that's that. We'll have time for one podcast next week. Then I'm going to Germany and Austria for 2 weeks.
That's very exciting. You're becoming quite a globetrotter.
Yeah. I'm very scared to see what disease hits Germany when we're there, like Omicron did with South Africa.
You're going to bring back Dutch elm disease and the trees are worried.
It's this new one is going to be even worse than,
all right. Well, you know what we'll do? Why don't we do a grab bag. Why don't we do a listener pod where people send in their questions?
Yeah.
You know, both Toronto teams are out of the playoffs. The Jays are scuffling. Why don't we do just the good old fashioned fun listener mailbag?
There's still lots of playoffs, lots of other things going on. I love it. Bob, enjoy your Sunday afternoon. Enjoy the sun. I will chat with you next week. All the best, my man. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.